Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
FM Los Angeles,
102.3
FM Riverside,
and 1050
AM
Palm Springs.
Oh, welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, and you would think it would be a wicked day because Joe Goldberg is in the house.
I'm wicked. I'm a stage play. I'm a book.
Yeah. It's dangerous.
It's me and Idina Menzel. We look so much alike. That's a wicked joke, those who are in the Broadway world like me.
Yeah, of course. Well, I just saw you in that movie last night.
Which one?
I think it's called Retribution. I can't remember now. It's the new Liam Neeson one.
No, I'm in the You series because I'm a serial killer. Carol Kempis. I get that all the time. Joel Goldberg. Did you know that Joel Goldberg's the name of the person who kills? Yes, I do. Thank you very much.
I'm using your name in my new book, so just so you know.
Go ahead. I'm a serial killer. If you type my name in
the
internet, up comes
they're the
Joel
people
Goldberg
that get killed. Yeah. No, they all get killed.
Good. Well, it's just another day in my house.
Yeah, just another, Well, let's get on to it. Now, we've got a just the perfect guest doing the perfect shot.
Yes.
His new book, I believe his first book, is called Perfect Shot. It's a thriller. And we've got Special Agent Alexandra Martel in his book one. So, Mr. Steve, you're insane. You're saney. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Alan and Joe. It's great to be here on the world's number one podcast.
Shucks, Al.
The world's got low standards.
Yeah.
I said McDonald's is the number one burger.
What's that mean for the world?
Yeah. They're not choosing the best at the moment. But thank you.
Take the honor. Take the honors.
Yes.
You've worked hard to get there, so take it.
Yeah, I've worked hard. Now I better retire. Listen, so how did you decide to write a book? Like, why?
Why? I suppose that's a really good question. When you look back and hindsight's 20/20, you probably, as a writer and author, you probably do ask yourself why a lot of times. So, but the answer is, I guess, straightforward. I've been interested in writing for my whole life. And I know a lot of people say that, but I was writing short stories and pretend novels ever since I was 8 or 10 years old. And then as I got older, I kind of laid that to the side and got older still and ended up raising a family. And I actually took a shot at it when I was much younger and things got busy. It wasn't going anywhere. I laid it down. And then about 10 or 15 years ago, I bumped into some showrunners on a TV show who I was talking to about their program. And I mentioned that I was interested in writing and told them about the roadblocks I had hit along the way. And their advice to me at the time was, if you want to write, just write. So being a simple kind of guy, I took that to heart and began writing. And then stumbled onto this character, Alex Martel, in one form or another for the last 8 to 10 years, and kept developing that character until she finally materialized into a full-length novel. And I guess the rest, as they say, is history. So I guess I've always wanted to write, and just life got in the way, and work and career and mortgages and all that stuff. So found the time recently, or made the time actually recently, and here we are.
Yeah, but I always say there must have been something that initiated you sending out the book, like getting it and deciding. Because a lot of people want to write, and a lot of people have the interest in it in all their life, and you can even sometimes sit down and write things. But what gave you that confidence to go, I can do this, and actually write it and then send it off to an agent or a publisher or any of that?
Yeah, the confidence is a funny thing, because I don't know if it's confidence or chutzpah or gall or whatever it is. But, when I started writing the first book in the Alex Martel series, which really never went anywhere, it sort of became my writing thesis, as it were. I spent about 4 years writing the first, 45,000 words, so half a novel-length story with that, just on the weekends, and up into the fourth year, which is round about 2018, 2018, or 2017, I guess, late in 2017, I stumbled onto the idea of Thriller Fest. I'd heard about Thriller Fest online, you know, found it on a website or whatever, and then I saw that if you wanted to get an agent to go to Pitch Fest, you could do that, but you needed a full-length finished manuscript. So that became the impetus for me to finish what I was writing, and I suppose that's where I kind of had the temerity to think that it was pretty good. And then foolishly, some people I met at BoucherCon at Thriller Fest also backed that silly notion up and thought it was pretty decent and encouraged me to keep writing and keep trying to get an agent. And that's really all it came down to, was wanting to do it and not listening to voices in my head or elsewhere that might have said that I couldn't do it. And not knowing any differently, I went ahead and did it. But it's, you know, my career has been full of things, obstacles that have said, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that, the odds are against you. And it's just something I've always chosen to ignore, again, whether that's gall or chutzpah or temerity or whatever you call it. So I went, got an agent, and the rest is, again, bringing us to where we are today, very luckily.
Well, it's a great story, and you spent a lot of time. I have a couple of questions here because I'm writing kind of like the way you're going for my next book, but you spent a lot of time with Alex. What did you see in her? What were you trying to get out with her as a character as you spent those years building her up in those different attempts to writing a book and finally getting to the last one?
I liked in Alex that I found a voice, because I had written or tried to write a number of male character voices before her. And whenever I did that, for whatever reason, they always came off as, you know, somewhat gumshoey, Mickey Spillane gumshoe kind of characters, more graphic novel than novel. And when I began to write the Alex Martell character, it just found, that character found a voice, or I found a voice in that character, I suppose. So as I wrote the story and saw the story through her eyes, the story started to go somewhere, the character started to develop, and it was just fun to do. You know, she's a pretty strong, independent, talented, determined individual, and I was easily taken by her as a character, and she became a lot of fun to write.
Okay, let me hit you up, because I am now writing my first female lead character. Tell me about how you researched, or did you feel inadequate, or whatever the word is, for a male writing the female character? I've done a lot of research on this. I just might get somebody who's just got a successful book published. Tell me about your journey with the female lead character.
And that's very valid. And I think there's a couple of things that helped me. One is, for the, you know, I was a paramedic for more than 30 years, and I worked in emergency management after that career for 10 more. I was a tactical paramedic with, you know, as a police medic. So I worked with a lot of great, very high achieving people in general, men and women. And really, in that sense, gender, sex, whatever you want to call it, didn't distinguish itself. There was no line drawn between one talented person and another that I work with. I work with great cops. I work with great medics. Some were male, some were female. And when I was partnered up with female medics or female police officers for different roles, again, there was no real delineation between what was a man and what was a woman. So in terms of the skill set, in terms of the behaviors on the job that I learned, you know, that was easy enough to kind of master, because I had, you know, 30 years, three, four decades of examples to go by. But when it came to the danger zones, you know, the avoiding the cliches and getting into the head of writing a female character, that was probably more challenging. And I would say I probably made mistakes in the beginning, but I've been married for 35 years to a pretty tough woman. And when I handed her pages, there were times, you know, I got the brush out in front of a mirror and my character would be brushing her long, you know, hair in the mirror. And my wife very quickly would put an end to those kind of stereotypes if I were sort of going astray. So, you know, if there's two things that contributed, one was just having great models, role models, people I work with to build the character around. The second, as far as the writing itself went, you know, I had a fantastic first reader and editor in my wife, Lynn, who helped keep me on the path of not making too many stereotypical type of errors.
Yeah, I'm doing the same thing, obviously. And my daughter, my oldest daughter, she's in her early 30s. She's about the age of my character, and she's an avid reader of books for female characters. I'm actually running it through her and thinking of her as I'm writing the book, that's the role model. And I've been married for almost 40 years, too. And I did, and I have a motto up in front of me right here. I think it was Terry Pritchard who said, "I don't write women, I write people." I thought that was a great line.
Fantastic line, for sure.
Yes, that's right in front of me. You're not writing a female character, you're writing a person. So that has really helped me focus.
You know, my wife was a paramedic back in the 80s when she was one of, you know, one in 100 paramedics, one in 300-400 paramedics were women back then. So she did face challenges. She was an attractive woman in very much a man's field at the time. She faced obstacles, barriers, issues. And we've discussed those over the years. So I have from, you know, I've gotten her perspective on what it was like for her as a woman in a quote-unquote man's profession. Now, we wouldn't say that these days. You'd never refer to being a paramedic or a cop, you know, or even military to a certain extent as a man's profession because our world has changed so much. But back in the 80s, 40 years ago, that was very much the case. So just as in Joe's case, having the opportunity to bounce things off his daughter, I'm sure she puts the cultural zeitgeist into his stories as well, helps him think about what the modern interpretation or vision of his ideas are. And it's very true. You have to be careful of those potholes, but I've been lucky to be coached in various ways, you know, to hopefully avoid some of those cultural mistakes as well. I'd be reluctant to write a character, a person of color, a black person, because I don't have, while I know people, while I've worked with people, while I have friends who are in those communities, I don't have that lived experience. And for me to assume, as you said, what Denzel said, the cultural aspects of it, you know, there's always a fear of some appropriation or cultural appropriation, but more than that, I'd be afraid of getting it wrong. And as much as you try, you can, without someone close to you who you can bounce those ideas off of, it could become a laughable thing. But at the same time, I think it's important to try to reflect the world we live in. So I do have people of color in my book. In Perfect Shot, there are, you know, there's a number of them in the book that I've wrapped up now, but I'm just editing now, called Out in the Cold, book two in the Alex Martell thriller series again. But I do, as Joe said, I have to do a lot of research around those characters to try to at least approximate their reality. Not that I'll ever be able to nail it, because I'm not of that world, but just to try to approximate their reality.
Well, I go, boy, this is a deep topic. It's everything I'm working on right now, because the setting for my next book is a place that is racially divided as a city, and it's a true place. In none of my books, besides the obvious ethnicity, whether they be from China or Central South America, do I bring up race. You know, I sort of let the reader decide. And I'm trying to decide, how important is it to you, or is it to me, or is it the reader to identify race as a character? Right? Maybe it's a rhetorical question, but I'm trying to decide how far I want to go. Maybe I'm a coward. I don't want to do it, but I know I'm going to. Had you ever considered not even bringing up the racial element, just let the reader decide, or is it that important to the character in the story?
I think for a lot of characters, for most of my characters, I'm not sure I identify them specifically. I think you can guess, because a lot of, you know, my books involve there's a lot of European ethnicity. So, you know, there's a Turkish guy, he's going to be Turkish. You know, there's a Russian guy, he's going to be a Russian guy, you know, Slavic, whatever.
Yeah.
So it's easier in a way to not fall into the trap of identifying those characteristics. But when I write more about North American characters, then I generally do introduce a description that's more, you know, that captures more of the ethnicity or the color, whether the person is going to be Asian or a person of color, brown or black or whatever. It does happen that way. But I've also thought about how a lot of my characters are interchangeable, in the sense that if Hollywood came calling, which I obviously hope one day they will, for the most part, I wouldn't care how they cast my characters.
Exactly.
You know, I have probably guidelines that give them about who the character is. It's more important about what their traits are as a personality human being than their physical attributes. So So from that perspective, I might outline it in a book that they're this or that, you know, they have long hair or short hair or brown hair, black hair, blonde hair, blue eyes, whatever. But it's only to help give, I don't go into so much detail that it takes away the reader's imagination. And at the same time, and for the same reasons, I would leave it up to interpretation for Hollywood or anybody else to complete that picture for themselves.
So how do you find your books? Do you think that your writing are, let's say, do you write more about the, into the dialogue? Are you dialogue heavy or more description heavy, do you think?
I think I'm more character and description heavy. I like to, you know, I think if I had to improve somewhere, and I actually, that's a silly statement. I always want my writing to improve. And as I'm editing the second book, I'm certainly thinking, I just want to get better at writing in general. But if I had to kind of pigeonhole myself, I'd say I'm good at action and description, and developing and showing character. Dialogue is probably, if there's a weak point in my writing, you know, if I look at the Amazon and Goodreads reviews, they tell me that, maybe my dialogue could improve some more. So I certainly think that my characters speak a lot by their actions and their who they are as characters. Yeah, I don't know if that answers the question, but.
Well, let's go with that. When you were bringing up the Alex Martello book, did you start with Alex as a character, or did you start with a story that you had an idea and then you built the character around it?
The way I start all my writing is when I face a blank page, I picture a moment in time. I picture a scene. And into that scene, so I populate who's in the scene. So in the case of Perfect Shot, it opens up with Alex wearing a sniper ghillie suit in a forest looking through her scope. And that's, I have no story at that point. Literally, I don't know where I'm going. I just picture her in a moment and then start to draw the moment outwards, if that makes any sense. So it's totally driven by the scene, and the story builds from there. I never really know where I'm going as I'm writing the story until maybe I'm into the middle of the book or the first third of the book's finished, and then I sort of think, okay, well, I better set myself some kind of goalposts and aim for that, but I still don't know how I'm going to get there.
Do you build this story around a meaning, a subtext, something that you want a reader to get out of it besides the action?
No, I honestly don't go there. I hope that when I'm writing it, some of whatever those messages or themes start to develop organically, but I rarely think about it. Although once, you know, as I get to know my characters better, certain themes certainly take on a life of their own. So with Alex, it's about integrity and justice and, you know, vengeance, things like that. So those are themes built into the character, or really that flow from the character. But I don't preconceive those kinds of directions before I start writing, or even as I'm writing.
So why a sniper? What about that type of career or job got you into your character being that before?
That's a great question. And it's actually, I don't think I've ever been asked that before. Why a sniper? I wanted to distinguish Alex as a character, make her stand out from other characters out there in the thriller genre. And there's a lot of military type characters. There are a lot of police type characters, male and female. There's a lot of great female investigators. But I don't recall any female snipers or characters with the kind of background that I've, you know, imbued Alex with, which is that she was a combat medic. So here's the other thing. The story started with an interesting little trivia here. Alex started as a Canadian former Army type. And in the Canadian Army, in the backstory, in the period of the backstory that I began writing, you know, the Alex legend, as it were, her background, she could have been a sniper in the Canadian Army. But she couldn't have been one, you know, 10, 15 years ago in the U.S. Army. So I had to give her another kind of legend as well, which was she started as a combat medic. She had an event that led her to pick up a sniper rifle and be coached in how to use that sniper rifle. Turns out she had an aptitude for it that was recognized by another intelligence agency who kind of adopted her into their fold and trained her up to the level of, you know, super sniper, as it were. So really it came down to I wanted to give her some special characteristics that I didn't see as being very common out in the world of thrillers. And that's how, and I like the idea of snipers, I guess, whether it's the, you know, the old female Russian snipers or the, you look at, to, I'm drawing a blank on the great snipers back in the World War II, the Finnish sniper and all these other great characters. And I thought, that'd be pretty cool if I could make Alex, give Alex those particular skills and expertise.
Do you have sorry written on the bullet?
What I did think of was I wanted to have Alex says hello stamped on the case and the, and on the bullets.
Yeah, calling card never hurts when you're a sniper.
Right? No, not
the legend.
The legend, yeah, exactly.
How'd you do your research on your city? I'll just make this a simple question. You're all over the place. You're all around the world in some of this. How did you research? Where'd you go? These places you've been? And they ask you, how important is setting to your you as a character?
Oh, very important. Yeah, very, very important. I started, you know, when I was writing it, we were... So when I started writing Perfect Shot, it was round about January of 2020. I was on, and actually, Alan, you're going to know this right away. I was on Canadian Forces Base Trenton, CFB Trenton.
Yeah.
I was there for several weeks running a quarantine or an isolation facility for Canadians returning abroad from, you know, during the beginning of the COVID pandemic. And I began writing during the lockdown, Perfect Shot. It was a time we went out with my first book. The first book in the series went out the first week, the second week, first week of February, I believe, which was, it coincided with the week that New York was shutting down. So bottom line is, the first book I put in the drawer, the second book, I began to write the second book during the lockdown, which meant that all my research for setting and for most other things was virtual. So Google was my friend. But by the time I finished, we were back in, you know, the world was kind of opened up again. We were able to travel. So I was able to get to, with the exception of Turkey and Russia, every single location in Perfect Shot, I had a chance to visit firsthand, whether it was a bar, a restaurant, city, whatever. It was somewhere I got a chance to walk and in some cases sit and have a drink or a meal or whatever it was. So Google was the beginning, and then real actual travel was the you know, the final stroke.
Trenton Air Force Base. That's, I wrote a book about the Colonel Russell Williams, who was in charge there. He was killing all those girls.
Yeah, yes, you did. I'm familiar with the book and certainly familiar with that case.
Listen, so what drives your main character here? Like, what is it? Do you think fear drives her?
No. In her case, she's driven by this super sense of justice. The things, you know, goodness has to prevail. She's not a goody-two-shoes. She's got her damages. and she's certainly not a goody-two-shoes from the sense that, you know, she enjoys what she does. When she's a sniper, she enjoys taking a life for the right reason. But she has a tremendous sense of fairness and fair play and justice. And it drives her to catch the bad guys. It drives her to make sure the world is a safe place for others.
So how do you experience the writing community to itself? And I know your agent, and I know a lot of the people who reviewed your books, and we first met at BoucherCon as a conference. You know, what do you get out of these conferences? How do you experience the entire writing ecosystem?
I was surprised, I think, as most people are. So my first experience in this sort of writer ecosystem, taking it from being a solo practitioner, as it were, to a member of a community or a tribe, Thriller Fest in 2018 was my first foray into that world. And I was surprised because I went down by myself, and I thought very much that I would feel isolated, and, you know, I knew I was going to get some good information out of it. I knew I would meet some people, but I was really quite surprised at the camaraderie of the community. And that was my biggest takeaway from the whole experience, was how great everybody was. And the whole notion of paying it forward, which is something I really believe in, both in my past careers, but also certainly now. Writers who are years ahead of me in their journey have taken the time to talk to me or to lend a hand or to offer a blurb or to read my story or just, you know, chat and offer their wisdom. And that part has been a tremendous experience and probably the biggest eye-opener for me that I really wasn't expecting.
So what's the hardest thing about accomplishing a book?
The discipline to finish it. I mean, it's It's like this. So first of all, I'm not a super organized person. My wife will happily tell you that. I go about life fairly randomly in terms of, you know, I don't follow a plan. I just kind of, I must have ADHD, never been diagnosed, but I just kind of throw myself out there and bounce from one thing to the next, usually. But somehow when it comes to writing, I tend to focus a lot more. But the thing that you gentlemen both know, that when you're writing, it's hard to see the end. It's so far away. It's such a long journey. And keeping focused and remembering that every, you know, a journey of 100 miles begins with a first step or whatever that saying is, it's so true. You really have to accomplish the goal one step at a time. Or how do you eat an elephant? You know, one bite at a time, that kind of idea. It's such a big thing, such a hard thing that if you thought about it, you'd probably never do it. So really the idea is to want to do it, but to recognize that you just have to do it bit by bit, piece by piece, and get there eventually.
You think the book turned out how you originally thought it was going to be when you started doing this, and how it is now and how it finished? Did it turn out kind of how you pictured it in your mind?
Better, in the sense that I didn't know where I was going. So until, I'm trying to think at what point, it was well into the first 100 pages before I figured where I might go with it. And then as if you read the book, you know that it gets kind of technical in the sense that there has to be an understanding of what the thread is in the story. And so there's a lot of research in that. And to drive through that and keep going to the end, again, because I didn't have a roadmap, I didn't have an outline, and didn't really know where I was going, once I got to the end successfully, and then, you know, took a run through, first pass edit, second pass edit, whatever, I think ultimately I'm happier with the book. The book turned out better in my mind than I expected it to. So I'm very happy about that.
Did you have the series in mind? You wrote the first one. Did you have it plotted out, or is it book by book by book?
Yeah, really, it's book by book by book. The only, I do have kind of I have a file that lists about 5 or 6 ideas for future books, but there are no particular order. I haven't established kind of a series arc or anything like that. It's just ideas I have, and depending on where I'm at when I finish one will determine which one I pick up. Unless someone says to me, you know, if the publisher were to give me some specific direction there, or I guess let's call it advice or recommendations there, then that might help determine where I go next. But the only thing I really know is that's, you know, the nature of the stories is going to stay the same. It's going to be an international thriller, espionage, or the version of espionage that's in Perfect Shot anyway, because of course it's not a pure espionage tale at all. It's more like a Mission Impossible meets, you know, Bob Lee Swagger in that kind of setting. So that's about as much as I thought about. You know, there's lots of places I can go with a story, and of course, world events, current events, they certainly help inform where I might go next, but that's kind of all the thought I give into it. Other than I know, I can see 5 or 6 at least in this series if I'm given a chance to do that.
Well, 5 or 6 books is a long time, and I've written 4 espionage books, and I just felt the need to get away from it for a while. Do you... I know this is, you're writing the second book and it's in draft, but do you have a great American novel that you can see? I really want to write a science fiction book sometime, or a fantasy book, or To Kill a Mockingbird. Is that in you somewhere, or is it just going to stay? Well, you think you're going to stay in the espionage action adventure area?
I love this genre, but I can also see, you know, I mentioned towards the beginning of our conversation that when I tried to write male characters in the past, they were too kind of Mickey Spillane and, you know, Bogey style, Humphrey Bogart style characters. But I can see myself, as my skill as a writer hopefully improves over the years, I can see myself finding a way out of that corner that I paint myself in when I start to write those kind of characters. And I'd like to take a shot at writing some kind of I don't know whether it's going to be a private investigator or a reporter or a Columbo type guy, whatever it is. I have no idea, but certainly it's something. I mean, I've always been drawn to those kind of characters, the John Corey detective character, or the Bosch type characters, or the, as I said, the Mickey Spillanes and the Humphrey Bogart characters. So I can see myself heading in that direction and trying to find a character in the more noir feeling storyline.
Harlequin romance?
Yes, of course. Steve could be on the cover, shirt open, yeah. Head a gleaming,
my flowing blonde locks.
Yeah, yeah, you
gotta get a toupee.
A Fabio wig. Well, listen, are you living through your characters? Do you feel them? Do you sort of experience them as you're writing the scenes and you kind of, the hard things they go through and the good things and the bad things and all that? Do you actually live through it as well?
Oh, totally. Yeah, totally. And it's in a lot of ways, which is both the fun and the curse of writing. So in the good way, I was a wannabe tactical cop. I was never a police officer. My eyesight wasn't good enough until I had surgery in 2010, and by then it was more or less too late. So I became a paramedic instead, and then luckily I also had the opportunity to become a tactical medic with the Ontario Provincial Police, a huge, very large police service. So I got to play the tactical game then and line up in a stack and go in with a SWAT team. So I got to do that, but not as an officer. I was there as a medic to protect the police officers from harm and to hopefully fix them up if some harm, you know, fell upon them. But in my stories, I totally get to be the badass character. And, you know, I get to imagine what it's like to be Alex or Caleb doing the things they're doing. But the other side of it is I try to go a little dark sometimes. Not very dark, but, you know, I used to write a column for a paramedic magazine, a national paramedic magazine. I wrote the column for 3 years. And I was given carte blanche at writing whatever topics I wanted. And my publisher always said to me that when I chose to, you know, expose my soul, as it were, in the writing, those were my best columns. And I took that lesson to heart when I was writing this character, that I scratch at the surface of Alex's frailties and her, for lack of a better word, PTS. And I reflect on my own experience with trauma over 30 years as a paramedic. And I put that in the writing. So I very much get in the writing in that sense, in the good sense. And then I let the bad, you know, I let the bad side of things flow out of me and inform Alex's character. But I try to have a positive spin on it. So in a way, it's therapeutic for me. But it's certainly my background has informed my writing. And in a lot of ways, the writing and the characters, I think, in a way, kind of help fulfill me as well.
So was that kind of what you get out of the book? Like, I'd imagine living through characters, feeling them and working out the details and going through the challenges and stuff. At the end of the day, when you get the book in there and it's published, it's done now, it's over. What changes have it made for you?
Well, in the writing itself, it's never mind the therapy side. It's just fun. To have a good day writing both you gentlemen know this. When you have a good day writing where you've accomplished something beyond what you expected for that day or that week or that month or that project, whatever, that's so satisfying to come away and read something you've written and think, wow, that's good. Like, where did that come from? So there's a lot of satisfaction. I derive a lot of satisfaction from the writing itself. But, you know, I'm new to this. This is my first book, my first published book. And I'm still on that high. It was published November 14th. So I'm just so stoked that it's out there. I still get excited walking into a bookstore, seeing it on the shelves. You know, when people hit me up on social media that I've never met before and tell me they enjoyed it. So, yeah, I get all those things. And, you know, whether there's satisfaction from the characters themselves, I don't know. But the writing and creating the characters and watching them develop and watching the story flow through them, you know, in a way that I become just the vessel or the vehicle to transcribe what they're doing onto the page or screen. So there's a lot of satisfaction in those weird ways.
So what are you working on now? You're doing book two now. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, book two is finished. I'm literally in the stage of polishing it up, working on the edits to get back to my editor, which should be going in February 2nd. And then hopefully that will be an fully accepted manuscript, and it'll just be getting it polished up and ready for its publication, which is out in the cold, is slated for publication November 12th of 2024. And it's the same series character and cast of characters as well, or some of it. I don't want to give too much away, but same series.
So who in your real life have you killed off in your books?
Who in my real life have I killed off?
Yeah, come on. There's guys. We know there's real.
Bobbing in the lake somewhere.
Yeah, there's someone. Have you ever taken a real life character and made them kind of the bad person or made them a person that suffers awful in your book?
I have not. And that's an honest answer. I have not. Have people I've known, bad people I've known, informed characters? Yeah, I would say maybe not bad people, but bad groups, bad industries. You know, I don't know how to put that. You know, EMS is it's a great job, but it hasn't always been the best profession from as an industry. EMS is the sort of poor stepchild to the siblings, you know, the police and fire community. It's changed now. It's very much, it's so much more professional than it was. But in the olden days, being a medic, a paramedic, an ambulance driver, attendant, whatever it was back in the 80s and 90s, it was a hard profession with some not so great leadership. And when I think of bad leadership and I write about bad leadership or bad actors from an organizational standpoint, sometimes I default to thinking about some of the bosses I've had in the olden days. And again, not so much in the last 10, 20 years or so, but in the old days, you sure met a lot of people. I sure met a lot of people that as bosses, had them as bosses, that it's very easy to put into a bad guy's persona. So whether it's lack of caring or empathy or whether it's just how they treat people who work below them. Yeah. So no one in particular, just a class of people, we'll say.
Oh, come on. We want some names.
Not going to happen.
We can get them on the other line.
That's right.
And help, see how this...
And scoop the dirt on Steve, yeah.
Yeah, come on. We get some real action here. Well, I appreciate you being on. So listen, social media, website, do you like to interact with readers? And how do you do that?
Yeah, I love it. So I'm present on all the, sadly, on all the growing number of social media platforms out there. So, you know, the formerly known as Twitter, now X, on Instagram, Threads, and my handle though on all three of those is at Steve Ursaney. On Facebook, I have an author page. My website is steveursaney.com. So yeah, I'm everywhere. And I do love hearing from. There's a contact link on my website. I get a kick out of it still when I get a unsolicited email or text, you know, through Facebook Messenger or something from somebody who wants to talk the book or tell me, especially if they tell me it was good. I mean, if they didn't tell me, if they didn't like it, maybe I don't want to hear from them. But if they have something nice to say, I always love hearing those, getting those messages.
Yeah. Well, we'll make sure you get some of the other ones too.
Release the bots.
So now the book, Perfect Shot. It's a thriller. Special Agent Alexandra Martel, book one. And the author's with us, and he's been entertaining. So, Steve Ursaney, thank you for being here.
Well, Alan and Joe, thank you so much for having me aboard the show. I had a lot of fun.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.